1, Chapter 1, Text 9. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tatra tatantasayushman bhavata yadvanishtitam pumsam ekantata sreyas tanne shamsitum arhasi. Please therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the worship of the Acharya is recommended. The Acharyas and Goswamis are always absorbed in thought of the well-being of the general public, especially their spiritual well-being. Spiritual well-being is automatically followed by material well-being. The Acharyas therefore give directions in spiritual well-being for the people in general. Foreseeing the incompetencies of the people in this age of Kali, or the Iron Age of Quarrel, the sages requested that Suta Goswami give a summary of all the revealed scriptures, because the people of this age are condemned in every respect. The sages therefore inquired of the absolute good, which is the ultimate good for the people, the condemned state of affairs of the people of this age of Kali is described as follows. Om Gyanate Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada in the purport says, foreseeing the incompetencies of the people in this age of Kali, or the Iron Age of Quarrel, the sages requested that Suta Goswami give a summary of all revealed scriptures, because the people in this age are condemned in every respect. So foreseeing the incompetencies of the people in this age of Kali, we discussed this before, that great sages are Trikala Gya. They can see past, present, and future. Even we, to some extent, can see past, present, and future. By studying a present situation, you can know sometimes what's going to happen in the future. Something's out there. If you see certain symptoms of a devotee, you may understand he's going to have spiritual trouble later on. Or if you see someone committing offenses, you may see that there'll be a reaction later on. Or even in terms of the different seasons. You know, it's winter. We know that there's what it's going to be like. It's right now like the spring, and we know what it's going to be like in August generally, and then we know what it's going to be like in next December. So, especially in terms of the Divya Yugas, the Yuga cycles, the millenniums, so to speak, They can see Kali Yuga and they can see what's coming. Even we can see what's coming now. We know often that people are predicting, you know, in the year 2000 so many things will happen. To a certain extent, whether they exactly happen the way people predict, you know, just knowing the scriptures and seeing how sinful the people of the Kali Yuga have become and seeing how the society has become more passionate and artificial and just understanding the modes of nature, that passion leads to ignorance or destruction. We can see to a certain extent what the future will be of society. So what to speak of these great sages who actually can know the future. One time, this is a little bit off the side, but I think it's interesting. One time there was a young man who worked for me and later became a bogus guru. You know, he would always do this thing with his nose that he was breathing in on either side. He was really like a mystical type person. Very, very cunning and very, very powerful. I couldn't understand what he was doing. He was already holding one side of his nostril and breathing in and out of the other. And later I learned from my Sanskrit teacher who went up to the Nepal and met the father of one of our other boys, who was a very elderly and respected Ayurvedic physician, that he knew Swar Shastra. Swar Shastra is a system of regulating the breath that purifies, and they do it through the nostrils. They regulate the breath that purifies the consciousness so that people very, very subtly can understand even the future. And this Ayurvedic doctor, by doing that, he basically, practically would know what was wrong with the patient before he came in the door. So what to speak of these great sages and how purified their consciousness is. It's Kali Yuga. We don't even have an experience of purified consciousness. Because Om Agyanatim and Andh, you know, we're born into the darkest of ignorance. We don't know what the mode of goodness is. We don't know how much by cultivating the mode of goodness the senses can be illumined. Just as when you get up in the morning and you meditate and chant or read, things are so much clearer than the afternoon when passion takes in. But what to speak in other ages that were in goodness? And what to speak of being great sages? I didn't discuss yet about Shonaka Rishi, who's the most eldest and learned Vedantist, the one who is asking the questions to Sutta Goswami. He's actually the one that's speaking these questions right here. Even discuss him. He was called, in the previous verse, he was called Shonakadaya. Shonakadaya, what is that verse? It's, you know, let's check for it. Yeah, headed by the sage Shaunaka. He was, in the commentaries, it's described that he was older than Manu, Swayambhuva Manu. He was millions and millions of years old. He was studying the scriptures for millions and millions of years. A great exalted personality. So you can understand how sensitive they were to the future. And meeting at Naimisharanya for the specific purpose of counteracting the age of Kali Yuga, because they saw in a future purport it's going to say surcharge with opposition. This is what they're seeing. Opposition to spiritual life, opposition to yajna, to sacrifice, to vows, to vrtas, to determination, to character. Character means to stick by principles. You need strength to do what's right, rather than what's immediately, rather than what's immediately satisfying to you. It takes strength, and they'll see that this age is going to rob that strength. So they're seeing the quality, they're seeing the general condemned nature of the people of Kali Yuga who are weak spiritually. Weak spiritually means that they don't have the strength to follow principles, that, you know, that to carry through. So we already have this image of the sages meeting at Namasharanya. And a holy place. And that point also that Borijan made, I'd like to repeat. They're engaged in sacrifice. They themselves are making sacrifice. And they're making that sacrifice for the benefit of others. So Borijan Prabhu said it's the mark of a sage and it makes one a sage. So they're there and they want to know what to do. They want a strategy to counteract this influence. And therefore to get that knowledge, to get that truth, they have to access the Vedas. Vedas means the knowledge. They have to, and therefore they have to approach someone who knows the Vedas. And they have to approach him in the correct way. That we discussed in the previous verse, and they have to approach someone who's qualified. So all these things were, the conditions were set, and now we have them asking their questions with concern and with concern, with compassion, and wanting to know. See, for the people, Pumsa, for the people in general, they're begging him what to do. What, and the interesting, they're going to ask six questions. Each question is meant to extract the strategy of, from the Vedic literatures, to extract the represented by the Acharya, to extract the strategy, to extract the panacea, to extract the solution for us, what to do, so that people in this age can actually elevate their consciousness and they can actually become satisfied. They can actually become free from suffering. Hmm. So this is the first of six questions asked by the sages of Namasharanya led by Shonaka Rishi. So this is the first question. What is the ultimate benefit for mankind? What is the ultimate and absolute good? And seeing what they are seeing, which is the condition of Kali Yuga and the condition of the people in Kali Yuga, it's a very, very intelligent question, because in the present age, and this will be described, the next verse will describe why they're asking this question, but the basic reason is people just don't have sufficient time to go through the Vedas. And therefore, they'll never get to the goal. They need to have the sufficient time, nor did they have the sufficient character and strength. And therefore, they have to know what the ultimate good is. Just like we discussed this in the third verse, when the Srimad Bhagavatam was described as Nigamakalpaturo Galitam Palam. You know, it's the ripened fruit. So you get the ripened fruit, there's so many things that you have to do. You have to cultivate the land. It's like we spoke to Acharya yesterday, who's in Gitanagari, you know, cultivating his own land, you know, and growing his own vegetables. So you have to cultivate the land, then you have to plant the seed. Then the tree has to grow. It takes some time, and then the fruits come. But if you have to eat, and you only have 6 months, then to go, you know, to cultivate the land, plant the seed, and you'll never get to the fruit. No, it would be very foolish. Because maybe it takes 2 years for the tree to grow, and or 3 years and before you can get the fruit. So although ordinarily, if you had a lot of time, this would be a good way to get nourished by cultivating the land and growing the fruit. You know, cultivating the land and weeding it and then watching the tree grow and watering it. Ordinarily, this would be a very good way of getting the fruit. But if you only had 1 year left, if your lifespan was only 1 year, then it would be quite foolish to get food this way. So that's what the sages of Kali, that's what the sage of Namasharanya see. They see the Vedas as a way of cultivating the consciousness, but there's a goal. Vedaischa sarveham eva vedyo vedanta vid vedavid evacham. Of all the Vedas, I am to be known. So there's actually a goal. And if you don't get to the goal, then everything you're doing is useless. And therefore, later on, they'll also quote a verse, dharma svinushtita pumsa viviksena katasyat no pariyed yadivatim shrama eva hikevalam. That religion becomes useless unless you get the fruit, which is attraction to Krishna. So they saw that you would never get to... So they wanted to extract from the Vedas immediately the fruit. Just tell us where to get the fruit. Because there's no time for this other process. I also gave an example of, I think to you before, about yoga asanas. And what we know, I think we're trying to have a nice sadhana in the morning. And we know that there's preparations for that sadhana that are important, like how we eat the previous day. You know, so all these things are important, that the health is good, even some exercise. But I gave the example, if someone is going to work at 7 o'clock and wakes up at 5, and then to make his consciousness calm and peaceful so he can chant with attention, he does 2 hours of yoga asanas and pranayama. And then after the 2 hours, he says, I have to go to work. Then what he's done was useless, because the whole purpose was to focus the mind on Krishna. In the 6th chapter of Bhagavad, I think the 8th chapter, it's described yoga mishra bhakti. Previous ages, they can do yoga mishra bhakti. They can practice yoga and purify all the chakras with the purpose of ultimately meditating on Krishna. But in this age, you don't have the time to do it. You don't have the strength to do it. So therefore, looking and seeing the condition of the people of Kali Yuga, Shonaka Rishi and the sage of Dharmashastra say, what is the ultimate and what is the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general? This is his intelligent question. Now, another interesting point here is that they're asking about the ultimate good. So, in other words, they want an easily understandable way. But the interesting thing is that they're asking for the ultimate good, but generally, if people are very, very fallen and very, very much condemned, then how can they go to the ultimate? Generally, the ultimate seems to be the most difficult. And the interesting thing is because the ultimate and absolute good is The ultimate and absolute good is devotional service. Even though it's the perfected state, now I'll quote this probably in every class, Prabhupada said the perfected state of the living entity is called a devotee. But at the same time, that process of devotional service is not dependent on material qualification. What devotional service means is that by constitution you have a relationship with God, and that your process of self-realization is engaging in that relationship. The relationship is service. And your advancement is the reciprocation of God, who's a person in that relationship. There's no material qualification to engage in a natural relationship. If you're a mother and someone is your son, you don't need to be rich, famous, strong, austere, learned to engage in that relationship. So at the same time, the Abhideya Tattva, we'll use this word sometimes, the one of the truths about the practices of devotional service is that it's universally applicable. One has a right to take to the process of devotional service and serve Krishna, as one has the right to take bath in the month of Magh. The month of Magh means January in India. I bathed in the Ganga in January. Anyone can do it. So this is their question, therefore. Again, envisioning Kali Yuga, its effect on us. Now, what is the absolute and ultimate good? Seeing us, seeing our lack of qualification, seeing our inability, later on it'll be mentioned, to undergo Vana Ashram. Vana Ashram was also a very gradual process. Prabhupada called it the Vedic adventure. If you execute Vana Ashram properly, then you gradually elevate yourself just by doing your duties. Described in the Shastra that if you execute Vana Ashram perfectly for 100 births, you can get the post of Lord Brahma. You know, you're a Sudra and you do that, and then you can gradually elevate yourself. But we described before when we discussed the second verse, Sadhya Varudyate, right? Sadhya, immediately. Krishna becomes compact in the heart. Sushushro. It's just by your eagerness to hear. Bhakti is just your sincerity. You can rise to the highest stage without going. We can read that again. It's also when in the glory of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the process, because when they're going to ask for the absolute and ultimate good, it's going to be described that it's devotional service, unmotivated devotional service. That's going to be the answer. That it's unmotivated devotional service, which is based basically on chanting and hearing and your eagerness to hear. So we saw in the second verse, Prabhupada said, without undergoing the different stages of realization set forth in the Vedas, one can be immediately can be lifted immediately to the position of Paramahamsa simply by agreeing to receive this message. So even though it was Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite, even though it was Nigama Kalpa Taro Galitam Palam, the fruit of the Vedic literatures, even though it was, you know, it's written by the author of the Vedas and the maturity of his realization, still, the qualification is our eagerness to hear. Prabhupada said the process is simple. The application is difficult. Process is simple. Anyone can do it. You just have to do it because it's your natural and constitutional position. And it's the perfected state. You just have to do it. So therefore they're asking this first question. Again, the first question is, what is the ultimate benefit for mankind? Now, it's interesting also here in the purport, and I'm going to spend a lot of time on this verse because it sets the stage for, you know, the focus of the focus of the sage of Namasharanya, the theme of what they're going to be asking, there's six questions. Their focus is they're seeing Kali Yuga. They're seeing Kali Yuga. They're seeing its condemned state and its effect on the qualifications of the people in general. And then they're also seeing the process, which is to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, hear about Krishna, just as the process that we're undergoing. That is the process that can elevate one. So in Kali Yuga. And therefore, all these questions will ultimately be connected to hearing the Bhagavatam, because the answer to this question will be that the best thing that one can do, the Paro Dharma, is to serve Krishna without any motive and any stop. That means chanting and hearing. So they're going to have that vision. And they're asking this. Now, an interesting thing here also is the sages say blessed with many years. You're blessed with many years. This is especially a good blessing for someone who's a scholar. There's one statement in the scriptures that, you know, a sadhu should live like he's going to die tomorrow. And a sadhu should live like he's going to die, and a student should you know, be in the mood that he's going to live forever. If you think you're going to die tomorrow, then it's hard to get into the study of the, you know, the, you know, become really learned. Maybe you'll just chant and hear about Krishna. So, and they're blessing him that he should live for many years. And he being blessed for many years, it refers to Suta Goswami. I haven't explained this before, but who is Suta Goswami? He's the son of Roma Harshuna. Initially, there was a great sage, Roma Harshuna, who was to speak, enlighten everybody at Naimisharanya. He was one of the sages that was entrusted by Vyasadeva with one of the branches of knowledge. After Vyasadeva, he entrusted different sages to different Vedas. So one who was entrusted was Roma Harshuna. And when Balaram didn't want to participate in the battle of Kurukshetra, in the fratricidal war, because Duryodhana was his student. So he felt that he had a conflict of interest. So instead of engaging in the battle of Kurukshetra, Balaram went on pilgrimage. And when Balaram came to Naimisharanya and he came before Roma Harshuna didn't stand up to greet him. So Balaram thought that was a great offense. Because even though he was sitting on the Vyasasan, he was disrespecting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So somehow or other, if he was taking that position as representing Vyasadeva, then his primary duty was to offer respects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he didn't do that, Balaram, I think he took one piece of grass or something. I forgot the story right now, but he was killed. But then the sages were in a dilemma. And I forgot, somehow or other, it was interesting that Balaram took the curse, took the rectification for killing Roma Harshuna. I think he had to go on pilgrimage. But at the same time, I forgot the exact details, but at the same time, He blessed him, you know, with all the blessings that Roma Harshuna, in other words, by installing his son represents the father. But at the same time, Balaram gave him all the blessings that his father had so he can do the work. And one was that he would live for many, many years, that he can become very learned. So now we'll go to the next verse. Prienalpa yasha shabha kalabas min yuge jana manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya upadruta. O learned one, in this age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. So this describes why the sages have asked the previous question. Because Kali Yuga, the answer is, why they ask it? Because Kali Yuga is so difficult. This is also described later in the 12th canto. Kaler doshe nidhe rajan eko asti mahagunan kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangam parambrajet. Kaler dosha nidhe rajan. Nidhe rajan means O Maharaj Prikit, Sukadeva Goswami was speaking, O King. Kaler doshe nidhe rajan. Nidhe means ocean. Kaler dosha means fault. Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. It's an ocean of bad qualities. In fact, eko asti mahaguna, there's only one good quality in Kali Yuga. And that is kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangam parambhaje. The only good quality is kirtanad eva krishna, so that you can do Krishna kirtan, that you can glorify Krishna. This is a very wonderful purport. We'll just read a little bit of it. The devotees of the Lord are always anxious for the spiritual improvement of the general public. When the sages of Namasharanya analyzed the state of affairs of the people in this age of Kali, they foresaw that men would live short lives. In Kali Yuga, the duration of life is shortened, not so much because of insufficient food, but because of irregular habits. By keeping regular habits and eating simple food, any man can maintain his health. Overeating, over-sense gratification, over-dependence on another's mercy, and artificial standards of living sap the very vitality of human energy. Therefore, the duration of life is shortened. So these are the this is the qualities of Kali Yuga. Priyanalpa, priyana, almost always. Opa, meager. Ayusa, like Ayurveda, ayusa, duration of life is always meager. So this is a important, you know, disqualification of Kali Yuga for doing any type of yogic process or indirect process of purification to prepare you for the ultimate goal, which is to meditate on Krishna. So it's interesting here. There's a few subsidiary points, but what drains us? Not so much insufficient food, but irregular habits. I could give a whole class on this, but it's beyond the scope of this particular, you know, purport and the verses that we're reading together. But regularity gives one health, strength, so many things, just to be regulated in eating so that your body, you know, your body knows exactly what it's going to get and you know exactly how your body's going to respond, and therefore you give it the, you can maintain perfect health if you just regular eating is actually, regular proper eating is probably the main component of good health. And because most people don't do it, they're not healthy and they can't predict how their body's going to react in any situation. This point also, over-dependence on another's mercy. Over-dependence on another's mercy means, especially in Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said, kalo sudra sambhava. Everyone is like having to work for other people. Very few people are given a chance to be independent, but the strain is, is that there's no kindness. You're depending on other people's mercy, but there's not actually mercy. So therefore, people are always in a fearful condition because at any moment they can be fired, they can be removed. There's not some type of structure where you're in a community where the people you have to depend on actually have care and concern for you. Just like the Mormons, you know, they have a community, and I'm not promoting Mormonism, but they have some nice social structures. They have a community where everyone in the community, everyone that's a Mormon is required to give the equivalent of 2 days' meals into a welfare fund. So people feel a natural security. You know, because if there's trouble, then there's support. But the situation in Kali Yuga is so straining because the people that you're in relationships with for your economic dependence have no concern for you. And therefore, you can work for 20 years and someone could let you out. Or just the whole economic structure is so fragile, it could collapse. And I'm sure even hearing this, so many people are feeling so much strain. Medical costs are so high. If you don't have health insurance, you're worried, what will happen to me if I get sick? So there's so much dependence in Kali Yuga on people who have no connection with you and no relationship with you, that you're always in a situation of anxiety, and that anxiety saps your strength. This is just the nature of Kali Yuga. And therefore, you know, the ayusa, the life, if it's not the duration of life, it's the strength of your life. It's just drained in Kali Yuga. And Manda, people in this age are also very lazy, not materially, but in the matter of self-realization. So people are lazy. They lack spiritual strength. Growing up in India, I clearly saw, as people would come to me when I was in charge of the school maybe 15, 20 years ago, and families would come with the child, the father, and the grandfather. And you could automatically see by talking to them how the spiritual strength had declined. How the child came in with like a shirt that said, something like, you know, Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse, you know, something like that. And then his father was a more respectable man. And if you would question him, he would still worship the gods. You know, and then if his grandfather was there, he would be worshiping every morning and evening. And if you ask him about his grandfather, oh, he was like 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon. And you got that kind of, you got that vision if you went back further in time. In Kali Yuga, the character and strength that people had, and we ourselves can see that we don't have that strength and determination. It's such a struggle to do the basic things in Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada first came, he said, okay, you chant 64 rounds. Bhaktisiddhanta said, if you don't chant 64 rounds, you're like an animal. That really means is that you should chant 64 rounds if you have time after you do all your service. But if you have service, that's okay. And he said, oh, we can't do it. Then they said, no, we can't do that. He said, oh, chant 32. Okay, you know, no, we can't do that. Then Prabhupada said, okay, chant 16, but at least 16. But it's the strength. We have so little strength. And we're lazy. It's the nature. And the sage of Namasharanya was seeing this. And now here's another point that you're misguided. Even if you had the strength, what would you use that strength for? Because due to a bad system of education, men have no desire for self-realization. I was reading in Satsrup Marja's book, My Journey Through Books. He told about all the books he was reading. And then he described when he came to university, Staten Island Community College. And he had a lady teacher named Mrs. Alexander. and how she was indoctrinating him against spiritual life. He's being indoctrinated against spiritual life. So you're misguided. And then you're unfortunate. Why? Because even if you get some training in spiritual life, you're so unfortunate because there's so many cheating teachers. So that's Manda, Sumanda Mateya. Manda is lazy. Sumanda Mateya is misguided. And Manda Bhagya, so unlucky. Because even if you think, oh yes, I should have self-realization, you can get caught in it with a cheating teacher. I have a lady cousin who's in one sense very, very sincere, but she has a bogus guru. And upadruta means always disturbed. And this is how Prabhupada describes it. In this age, men are victims not only of different political creeds and parties, but also of many different types of sense gratificatory diversions, such as cinemas, sports, gambling, clubs, mundane libraries, bad association, smoking, drinking, cheating, pilfering, bickerings, and so on. Their minds are always disturbed and full of anxieties due to so many different engagements. So we could probably add on to this in 20 years since Prabhupada wrote this, 100 more diversions. List the different television shows that we're addicted to. You know, the different music. You know, mundane music that we're addicted to. You know, list the computer and all the things that diverts us to. And we're trying for spiritual life. Now imagine with all these qualifications, that the process of self-realization had material qualifications, as mentioned in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that you had to go to a solitary place, a complete celibacy, that you had to sit straight for many, many years. So therefore, they're asking, what is the absolute and ultimate good? And the ultimate and absolute good is hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're doing. We should do it very sincerely, because this is what will give us the spiritual strength that we need. Text 11. Purini buri karmani shrotavyani vibhagasa atasadho tayatsaram samudritya manishaya Bruhi badraya bhutanam yenatma supersedati. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties, which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all the scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instructions their hearts may be fully satisfied. So this is the second question. The third question, the first question, what was the absolute and ultimate good? This is a very, very similar question. So these questions are actually very similar, and in fact, both these questions will get the same answer. What is the essence of the scripture? What is the ultimate absolute good? The answer is, it'll come in the second chapter, Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo. I think it's 2.6 or 2.5. Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo, the supreme dharma or occupation or religion, Yato Bhakti Aradoksaje. It's devotional service, bhakti. Ahaitaki Apratiyata. Without any motive. In other words, without any motive and without any break. In other words, pure devotional service. It's not mixed with anything. That will give satisfaction to the self. So, But you know, there's a little bit, you know, they're a little bit different. Because in text 9, the difficulty, why they want to ask for the absolute ultimate good, which is devotional service, the reason why they're asking that question is the difficulty is you can't do it because of Kali Yuga. Because of the qualities described in the previous verse. And in text 11, the reason why they're asking for the essence of the scriptures is because it's even if you could do it, it's so hard to figure out. Because the scriptures, as Prabhupada will say here in the purport, there are many varieties of approaches which are recommended for different types of living beings in different times and different places. Consequently, the number of revealed scriptures are innumerable. There are different methods and prescribed duties recommended in these various scriptures. So therefore, taking into consideration the fallen condition of the people in general in this age of Kali, the sages of Naimisharanya suggested that Sutta Goswami relate the essence of all such scriptures because in this age it is not possible for the fallen souls to understand and undergo all the lessons of these various scriptures in avana and ashrams. I've described this also before, people who have heard my lectures. It's not enough to be a pharmacist. A pharmacist has all the medicines. But you need a doctor who selects the medicine for you based on his diagnosis of your condition. And then he selects the medicine. So the Vedas are like a pharmacy. They have all medicines for all different people. And the people need particular duties according to their own particular condition and according to the particular time. And then it gets really complicated because times change, and therefore you have to have acharyas who emphasize different things. This is why we consider Srila Prabhupada the acharya, because he saw, you know, Kali Yuga now. He saw our condition at this particular point in history. And therefore, he, following his own guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was also an acharya. You know, took the teachings of Rupa Goswami, and he didn't change it, but he stressed and emphasized, you know, certain activities like pushing on stressing the missionary aspects of Krishna consciousness and, you know, congregational chanting of holy name. Of course, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message, so nothing has changed, but still there are charges. And they selected, and that's what's being described here. Burini buri karmani. Burini buri means many multifarious duties, shrotavyani, to be learned. Vibhagasa, by different divisions. There's so many divisions of studies. Ataha, therefore, O sage, saram sumudritya manishaya, by your knowledge, sumudritya, select sadam, the essence. Sadam is also means like the cream. So select the essence. So what's the essence of everything? Vedaista sarvaham eva vedyo vedanta krid vedavid. To know Krishna, that's the essence. That's the goal. That's the fruit of all the Vedic activities. So again, just as the previous question in text 11, which was asking the question, what is the absolute and ultimate good? Which the answer is devotional service, which means chanting and hearing, which means the Bhagavatam. Similarly here, when you ask for the essence of the scriptures, what's the essence of the scriptures? The essence of the scriptures is the Bhagavatam. Because the essence of religion is our eternal nature, which is to serve God. And religious activities, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever there's a discrepancy in religious principles, Krishna comes. Why? Prabhupada says in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, that they push one towards surrender to Krishna. So the essence is surrender to Krishna. That's the essence of religion. So he's asking him to please, please select. Again, all the various divisions of the scriptures will take many years to learn, so it is necessary in this age to go immediately to the essence. Immediately to the essence. I think we can go on today's codicy. Sutta janasi badram te bhagavan satvatam pati devakyam vasudevasya jato yasya chakir sayat. All blessings unto you, O Sutta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of God had appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva. So this is the third question. You know what purpose. In other words, when you say to someone, you know what purpose, right? Basically what you're saying is, you know, please tell me. So they're asking, what is the purpose that Krishna appeared? It's difficult to understand. Because when someone is forced to do something, then it's easy to tell why he's doing it. But if he's doing it in his own internal purpose, so what is the reason why Krishna appeared? Or what is it when it's appeared in the womb? This is very, very similar to Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatvataha Takva Deham Puna Janma Naiti Mam Eti Surjana. Janma Karma Chame Divyam, that if one knows Janma Karma Chame, the divine nature of Krishna's birth, why Krishna's appearing, the divine nature. Otherwise, we'll tend to look at Krishna's birth like our birth, which means we are forced to appear by our karma. We discussed that in a previous class, that what karma means is the consciousness by which one gets the material body. So Krishna's taking birth. We may think, therefore, that Krishna is ordinary, or he's not God, because he's, you know, when you take birth, you're first of all, you're not the origin of everything. There's something beyond you. In other words, to take birth, once you take birth, as we take birth, then we can have none of the characteristics of the absolute truth as described in text one. We can't be fully independent. We can't be the source of everything. So we may, when we see that Krishna is born, the natural tendency will be to think that he's not God, not the absolute, and not an ordinary person. And an ordinary person. So this is an important question, because you cannot have bhakti unless you have some bandhagyan. And some bandhagyan means to understand Krishna's relationship with this material world and the living entity. And Krishna's relationship to the material world is that he's the controller. He's the source. He's not under the modes of material nature. And unless you have that, unless you know that, there's no bhakti. The Chaturshloki Bhagavad Gita says, Aham sarvasya pavavo, atas sarvam pavartate, iti bhutva bhajanti mam bhutha bhava samavita. I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. The wise who know this, they can engage in my devotional service. So unless you have a clear understanding of Krishna's position, you can't be a devotee. You have to know Krishna's position. And this is interesting also. Krishna's called here Satvatam Pati. He's the protector of the pure devotees. this will be, I'm not going to go into this, but it's such a nice name for Krishna. Prabhupada says, sat means the absolute truth, and persons who are servitors of the absolute truth are called sattvatas. And the personality of God who protects such pure devotees is known as the protector of the sattvatas. It's interesting because this is one of the main reasons why Krishna appears. Paritanaya sadhuna vanashayacha diskrita. Paritanaya sadhuna, he comes to protect his devotees. Because they have a loving relationship. And therefore Krishna reciprocates with the devotee's service by always protecting him. So he's called sattvatam pati. So they know what purpose he appeared. Again, this is as we discussed this in the very first verse, as Vasudev. He appeared as Vasudev, the son of Vasudev. So he appeared as the son, but Jadmad Yasya Yataha. Everything is coming from him. Again, this verse you can see how it fits into Vyasadeva's vision. Vyasadeva had the vision of the absolute truth by which the Bhagavatam is written. And that vision saw that Krishna was apashyat purusham purnam. He was the supreme personality of Godhead. Apashyat purusham purnam. He was the supreme personality of Godhead. And the maya chitara pasayam, the illusory energy, was under his control. So he's not a product of Maya, he's not an ordinary person. So his birth is Atma Maya. This is all the Bhagavad Gita, the fourth chapter too. Ajopi san avyatma bhutanam ishvaram prakritim swam adishtaya sambhavam yatma maya prakritim swam. I appear by my prakritim swam, by my own nature. Sambhavam yatma maya, my own internal potency, my own desire, I appear. I'm not forced. And they say, Badram te, all blessings unto you. Now, this is a little bit unusual that the disciple will offer blessings to the superiors. It's actually, in one sense, it has a little element. It's not rasabhas. It's not a discrepancy in the relation, but still it's unusual. But why do the sages offer blessings to the superior? Because these particular sages, they're so powerful and so senior, they have the potency. And they're so eager to hear about the Srimad Bhagavatam that they want him to continue speaking. So they want to shower blessings upon their preceptor. You know, because they're so dependent on him to hear about the Srimad Bhagavatam. Text 13. Tana shushu shamananam arhas yanga nuvarnitum yasya batara bhutanam shemaya cha bhavaya cha. O Suta Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous masters, for one is uplifted by speaking them and by hearing them. So, this is text 13. This verse hints at the next questions. It's not the fourth question, but it hints at the fourth question. The fourth and fifth question are going to be about various types of incarnations. So they're expressing their eagerness to learn. The conditions are set also for them learning, because this eagerness, which will come up again and again, is the condition for actually realizing the absolute truth. It goes back again to the second verse that we explained, their eagerness. Their eagerness to hear. And I explained before the relationship between your submissiveness and eagerness to hear and your ability to actually, and your ability to extract the knowledge from the preceptor or teacher. Because the eagerness and submissiveness to hear indicates your willingness to accept that truth, to accept the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and we are His servants. So that eagerness and submissiveness to hear expresses our detachment and our willingness to be, in other words, to our desire to want that position. Our eagerness to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam is expressing our desire that we do want to be Krishna's devotees. We are sincere. We want to be Krishna's devotees. So give us this knowledge, right, which explains how we are just Krishna's servants and explains how Krishna is the controller and supreme enjoyer. But if we're ourselves still attached to that position of the controller and the enjoyer, then we may not be sincere, we may not actually want deeply to change that position and to change it to one in which Krishna is the enjoyer and controller and we're just his servants. And therefore, we will not be submissive and independent to that kind of knowledge that tells us that, no, you're not the enjoyer and controller, you're just Krishna's servant. Therefore, we'll maintain independence and we won't be submissive to authorities. And therefore, there's a limit to the extent that the preceptor can actually give you that knowledge. But when you're in the mood of, I use the term kinkri, what you want, I will do. Okay, this is what I want. I want you to serve Krishna fully. And I want you to be completely detached from the material world and fully surrender to your duties in devotional service. And this is how you do it, and this is how you do it, and this is how you do it. And if you continue with your eagerness, yes, tell me more, tell me more. I only want Krishna's glories. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vadagadish. I don't want wealth. I don't want fame. I don't want any of these things. I don't want women. Eager. Tell me more. Tell me more. Because this is what I want. I'm eager to hear. Tell me more about how Krishna is God. Tell me more how I am his servant. And tell me more about anarthas and how all these things I am attached to are useless. Tell me more. Tell me more. And the teacher gives more and more and more. So that sincerity, that desire to serve Krishna without any motive, and the expression of that is our eagerness to hear. So that's the first condition, and they're setting up the conditions. They're eager to hear about Krishna and how he's great and his pastimes. Prabhupada said the transcendental message of the absolute truth is not understandable by those who are materially absorbed. But under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, one becomes gradually purified. Therefore, one must be in the chain of disciplic succession and learn the spiritual art of submissive hearing. So you must learn this art, and that's what we're doing. We should be sitting and listening attentively to Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada. In the case of Sutta and the sages, their conditions are filled because Sutta Goswami is in the line of Vyasadeva because he heard from Sukadeva Goswami. And the sages of Naimisharanya are all sincere souls who are anxious to learn the truth. Therefore, And it says here, the teachings which are imparted by previous acharyas, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. So the speaker is Shukadeva Goswami, the hearer is Maharaj Prickett. They're on the same platform. For speaking and hearing are equally uplifting. They're equally uplifting. Just like I'm speaking every morning, you're hearing every morning. The benefit is no different. If it's done in the proper way, if I am able to present what Srila Prabhupada is teaching and Sukadeva Goswami is teaching in a humble and chaste way, and if I am doing that to what capacity I can, and you're anxious to learn this truth and apply it in your life, then the benefit is equal for both of us. Text 14. Apana samstritim gauram yannama vivisho grinan tata sadyo vamucheta yad vibeti shayam vayam. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. Now verses 14 to 16, I think we will finish today at 16, are a prelude actually to text 17 and 18, which are the fifth and sixth questions which the sages of Namasharanya asked Sutta Goswami to tell me about the Lord's incarnations, to tell me about Krishna. So these verses are meant to build up our enthusiasm by describing how great Krishna is, how exalted the position of Krishna is. So in this verse, it's a glorification of Krishna's holy name. That Krishna's holy name, and it's going to describe by glorifying Krishna's holy name, it glorifies Krishna. Because if his holy name is so powerful, then what to speak of the person? If his name is so powerful, then what to speak of the person? So this is how it's going to, encourage us to hear about Krishna. So, I read the verse, living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death. So entangling this material world is just so complicated and so entangling. They can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna. So the holy name is so powerful that even unconsciously that we chant the holy name. It's even said even by joking, there's different ways to do it. Even indirectly glorifying Krishna's name, then that's called namabhas. Then you can be freed, such a person who's in the complicated can be freed. So how powerful is Krishna's name? And if Krishna's name is so powerful, then how powerful is Krishna? So it's a prelude. Now we should hear about Krishna. It's coming up. And why is the holy name feared by fear personified? The answer is Krishna's all-powerful. In the previous verse, he was described as Satvatam Pati. He's the protector of his devotees. And Krishna's name is non-different than Krishna. So Krishna protects his devotees, and his name is non-different than him. This is why fear is, why The holy name is feared by fear personified. I had another comment here. Whoever makes us afraid, that thing is afraid of Krishna. He protects us, so they're afraid. Now it's basically, it's saying, you know, in a way, you know, I guess you can use, what is it, colloquial English, you know, don't mess with Krishna. And don't mess with his name. Because the name is not different than Krishna. So, Maya is so complicated, still by holy name one can be free. So that's there. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. We'll do the next verse, text 15. Yat pada samsaya sutta munaya prasamayana sadya punantyupasprishta svardunyapo nishevaya. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. So same point is mentioned. If by taking shelter of the person who takes shelter of Krishna is so powerful, then what does that say about Krishna? He's so powerful, it says, stronger than the Ganges. Sages who take complete shelter, lotus feet, can sanctify those who come. Narottam Das Thakur wrote a song, and in the song he discusses this verse too. Gangare paraso khoile paschate pavan darshana pavitra koro etu maravun. By bathing in the Ganga many, many times, one becomes purified. Darshana pavitra kora e tamara gun. By seeing the devotee, one becomes purified. E tamara gun, that is the devotee's quality. And I once heard this sadhu. He may have been one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. He came to the temple once. But he's still alive. Bhakti Vedan Puri Maharaj. Very favorable to Srila Prabhupada. He's still alive. And I heard him, he was talking about this verse. He said, Darshana Pavitra Kora Etamara Gun. He said, the Ganga, you have to go in it. You have to immerse yourself in it. He said, not even touching, just seeing. Darshana Pavitra Kora. Pavitra means pure. Darshan, just by seeing. So if the devotee is so powerful, then what to speak of Krishna? There's another verse in the Bhagavatam, Kirata Hunandara Pulinda Pulkasa Ambiryam Bhakyavinakashadaya Yenye Chapapa Yarapasraya Saya Shuyanti Vishne Prabhavishnave Namaha. It says all kinds of sinful people can become purified by one who takes shelter of the devotee, one who takes shelter of one who takes shelter of Krishna. Prabhave Vishnu, he has the power of God. This is a quote from the Manasiksha. When I heard Bhurijan give the Bhagavad Gita overview, he gave this quote. My dear mind, in the material life, you are attacked by lust, which is like a gang of thugs that waylaid innocent pilgrims, strangling you with strong, terrible ropes in the form of distress, pain, and futile endeavor. In this condition, you must cry out piteously and invoke the mercy of the unalloyed devotees of Sri Krishna, the enemy of the demon Bakasura. That will certainly protect you from the dilemma. So you must cry out and invoke the mercy of the unalloyed devotees. They're so powerful. The image is if someone's robbing you or something, you call out for protection. The simile, in material life, you call out for protection. Kova bhagavatas tasya punya shloke dya karmana Shuddhi kamo nishinuya yashakali malapanam. Who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? So, same thing, kim va parai. Who will not hear this Srimad Bhagavatam? Then who will not hear about Krishna? If even by unconsciously chanting his name you can be protected, if even by those devotees who take shelter of him, just by seeing them you can be protected, then who's not delivering deliverance from this age of quarrel and confusion, this Kali Yuga, then who is not willing to hear his glories? And then in the purport, we'll finish with this, Prabhupada describes Kali Yuga. The age of Kali is the most condemned age due to its quarrelsome features. Kali Yuga is so saturated with vicious habits that there is a great fight at the slightest misunderstanding. Those who are engaged in the pure devotional service of the Lord, without any desire for self-aggrandizement and who are freed from the effects of fruitive actions and dry philosophical speculations, are capable of getting out of the estrangements of this complicated age. The leaders of the people are very much anxious to live in peace and friendship, but they have no information of the simple method of hearing the glories of the Lord. On the contrary, such leaders are opposed to the propagation of the glories of the Lord. In other words, the foolish leaders want to completely deny the existence of the Lord. In the name of secular states, such leaders are enacting various plans every year. But by the insurmountable intricacies of the material nature of the Lord, all these plans for progress are being completely frustrated. They have no eyes to see that their attempts at peace and friendship are failing. But here is the hint to get over the hurdle. If we want actual peace, we must open the road to understanding of the Supreme Lord Krishna and glorify him for his virtuous activities as they are depicted in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you want to become free from all this influence of Kali Yuga, then this is the way. Okay. Any questions? It's clear to you what the message is. You see how the Bhagavatam now, how actually the message of the Bhagavatam has its own kind of theme. It described the glories of hearing the Bhagavatam. Then after that, the qualifications of the speaker and the hearer. And then this vision of Kali Yuga. And therefore the necessity of hearing Krishna's glories to counteract it. Okay, we'll end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. You have a question?
Actually, yes.
Okay, when I say, do you have questions? Ask. Go ahead.
Speaking about the text, it said that there's so many different scriptures, and Sutta Goswami was asked what the essence of the scriptures was, and I guess it was saying that there are different processes as well. Now, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it said that hearing Srimad Bhagavatam forms of devotional service. So, once again, here it's stating that this is actually essential to Bhakti, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's asking for the cream, the Srimad Bhagavatam.
I remember that Nam Sankirtan was one of the others.
Yeah.
Now, I know part of our sadhana is chanting japa.
Yeah.
But it seems like hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, residing in the Dham, and Nam Sankirtan, they're all the primary practices.
Nam Sankirtan also means chanting japa. Nam Sankirtan means, of course, what I have to see exactly what in the verse says. Yeah, I think it says Krishna Kirtana Gananar. Utkirtan. Ut means the throat. But when you're enthusiastic, you stretch your throat, just like a bird. When he wants something, he... So, Utkirtan. Krishna Kirtana Ganana. The loud kirtan, enthusiastic kirtan. Yeah. It's the Yuga Dharma. You know, chanting the holy name, but Japa is also chanting the holy name. That's also included in one of the most important items. That's within Nam Sankirtan.